She'd initially thought that this group might lead her up to the revel on the Oathgate platform, but she'd let herself be carried away by the darkness. Trembling, she stopped in place. The others stopped around her. The illusion, the spren-like tassels behind her, continued to stream even when she wasn't walking. There was no wind. The cultists' chanting broke off, and corrupted allspren exploded around several of their heads. Soot-black puffs. Some fell to their knees. To them, wrapped in streaming cloth, face obscured, ignoring wind and gravity, she would look like an actual spren.
"There are spren," Shallan said to the gathered crowd, using light weaving to twist and warp her voice. "And there are spren. You followed the Dark Ones. They whisper for you to abandon yourselves. They lie," the cultists gasped. "We do not want your devotion. When have spren ever demanded your devotion? Stop dancing in the streets and be men and women again. Strip off those idiotic costumes and return to your families."
They didn't move quickly enough, so she sent her tassels streaming upward, curling about one another, lengthening. A powerful light flashed from her.
"Go!"
she shouted. They fled, some throwing off their costumes as they went. Shallan waited, trembling, until she was alone. She let the glow vanish and shrouded herself in blackness, then stepped off the street. When she emerged from the blackness, she looked like Vale again. Storms. She'd become one of them so easily. Was her mind so quickly corrupted? She wrapped her arms around herself, trailing through streets and markets. Yasna would have been strong enough to keep going with them until reaching the platform. And if these hadn't been allowed up, most that wandered the streets weren't privileged enough to join the feast, then she'd have done something else. Perhaps take the place of one of the feast guards. Truth was, she enjoyed the thievery and feeding the people. Vale wanted to be a hero of the streets, like in the old stories. That had corrupted Shallan, preventing her from going forward with something more logical. But she'd never been the logical one. That was Yasna, and Shallan couldn't be her. Maybe she could become radiant and... She huddled against a wall, arms wrapped around herself. Sweating, trembling, she went looking for light. She found it down a street, a calm, level glow. The friendly light of spheres, and with it a sound that seemed impossible. Laughter? She chased it, hungry, until she reached a gathering of people singing beneath Noman's azure gaze. They'd overturned boxes, gathering in a ring, while one man led the boisterous songs. Shallan watched, hand on the wall of a building, Vale's hat held limply in her gloved safe hand. Shouldn't that laughter have been more desperate? How could they be so happy? How could they sing? In that moment, these people seemed like strange beasts, beyond her understanding. Sometimes she felt like a thing wearing a human skin. She was that thing in Urethiru, the unmade, who sent out puppets to feign humanity. "It's him," she noticed absently. "Wits leading the songs." He hadn't left her any more messages at the inn. Last time she'd visited, the innkeeper complained that he'd moved out and had coerced her to pay Wit's tab. Vale pulled on her hat, then turned and trailed away down the small market street. She turned herself back into Shallan right before she reached the tailor's shop. Vale let go reluctantly, as she kept wanting to go track down Kaladin in the wall guard. He wouldn't know her, so she could approach him. Pretend to get to know him. Maybe flirt a little. Radiant was aghast at that idea. Her oaths to Adolin weren't complete, but they were important. She respected him and enjoyed their time training together with the sword. And Shallan?
What did Shallan want again? Did it matter? Why bother worrying about her? Vale finally let go. She folded her hat and coat, then used an illusion to disguise them as a satchel. She layered an illusion of Shallan and her Hava over the top of her trousers and shirt, then strolled inside, where she found Dre and Scar playing cards and debating which kind of chowta was best. There were different kinds. Shallan nodded to them, then, exhausted, started up the steps. A few hunger spren, however, reminded her that she hadn't saved anything for herself from the day's thievery. She put away her clothing, then hiked down to the kitchen. Here she found Elokar drinking from a single cup of wine, into which he dropped a sphere. That red-violet glow was the room's only light. On the table before him was a sheet of glyphs, names of the houses he had been approaching through the parties. He'd crossed out some of the names, but had circled the others, writing down numbers of troops they might be able to provide. 50 armsmen here, 30 there. He raised the glowing cup to her as she gathered some flatbread and sugar. "What is that design on your skirt? It seems familiar to me." She glanced down. Pattern, who usually clung to her coat, had been replicated in the illusion on the side of her Hava. "Familiar?" Elokar nodded. He didn't seem drunk, just contemplative. "I used to see myself as a hero, like you. I imagined claiming the shattered plains in my father's name. Vengeance for blood spilled. It doesn't even matter now, does it, that we won?"
"Of course it matters," Shallan said. "We have Urithiru, and we defeated a large army of Voidbringers."
He grunted.
"Sometimes I think that if I merely insist long enough, the world will transform. But wishing and expecting is of the passions. A heresy. A good Vorin worries about transforming themselves."
"Give me your passion."
"Have you any news about the Oath Gate or the Cult of Moments?"
Elokar asked.
"No. I have some thoughts about getting up there, though. New ones."
"Good. I might have troops for us soon, though their numbers will be smaller than I'd hoped. We depend upon your reconnaissance, however. I would know what is happening on that platform before I march troops onto it."
"Give me a few more days. I'll get onto the platform, I promise."
He took a drink of his wine.
"There are few people remaining to whom I can still be a hero, Radiant. This city, my son, Storms. He was a baby when I last saw him. He'd be 3 now, locked in the palace."
Shallan set down her food.
"Wait here."
She fetched her sketchpad and pencils from a shelf in the showroom, then returned to Elokar and settled down. She placed some spheres out for light, then started drawing. Elokar sat at the table across from her, lit by the cup of wine.
"What are you doing?"
"I don't have a proper sketch of you," Shallan said. "I want one."
Creation spren started to appear around her immediately. They seemed normal, though they were so odd anyway, it could be hard to tell.
Elokar was a good man, in his heart, at least. Shouldn't that matter most?
He moved to look over her shoulder, but she was no longer sketching from sight.
"We'll save them," Shallan whispered. "You'll save them. It will be all right."
Elokar watched silently as she filled in the shading and finished the picture. Once she lifted her pencil, Elokar reached past her and rested his fingers on the page. It depicted Elokar kneeling on the ground, beaten down, clothing ragged. But he looked upward, outward, chin raised. He wasn't beaten. No, this man was noble, regal.
"Is that what I look like?" he whispered.
"Yes. It's what you could be, at least."
May I have it?"
She lacquered the page, then handed it to him.
"Thank you."
"Storms." He almost seemed to be in tears. Feeling embarrassed, she gathered her supplies and her food, then hurried out of the kitchen. Back in her rooms, she met Ishna, who was grinning. The short, dark-eyed woman had been out earlier, wearing Vale's face and clothing. She held up a slip of paper. "Someone handed me this today, Brightness, while I was giving away food." Frowning, Shallan took the note. "Meet us at the borders of the Revel in 2 nights, the day of the next Everstorm," it read. "Come alone. Bring food. Join the feast."
75. Only Red. 11 years ago. Dalinar left the horse. Horses were too slow. A misty fog blew off the lake, reminding him of that day long ago when he, Gavilar, and Satius had first attacked the rift. The elites who accompanied him were the product of years of planning and training. Primarily archers, they wore no armor and were trained for long-distance running. Horses were magnificent beasts. The Sunmaker famously had used an entire company of cavalry. Over a short distance, their speed and maneuverability had been legendary. Those possibilities intrigued Dalinar. Could men be trained to fire bows from horseback? How devastating would that be? What about a charge of horses bearing men with spears, like the legends spoke of during the Shin invasion? For today, however, he didn't need horses. Men were better suited for long-distance running, not to mention being much better at scrambling over broken hillsides and uneven rocks. This company of elites could outrun any harrying force he'd yet to meet. Though archers, they were proficient with the sword. Their training was unparalleled, and their stamina legendary. Dalinar hadn't trained with them personally, as he didn't have time to practice running 30 miles a day. Fortunately, he had plate to make up the difference. Clad in his armor, he led the charging force over scrub and rock, past reeds that released hair-like inner strands to shiver on the breeze until he drew near. Grass, tree, and weed took fright at his approach. 2 fires burned inside him. First, the energy of the plate, lending power to each step. The second fire was the thrill. Satius, a traitor? Impossible. He had supported Gavilar all along. Dalinar trusted him. And yet, I thought myself trustworthy, Dalinar thought, leading the charge down a hillside, 100 men flooding behind him. Yet I almost turned on Gavilar. He would see for himself. He would find out whether this caravan that had brought supplies to the rift actually had a shard-bearer in its ranks or not. But the possibility that he had been betrayed, that Satius could have been working against them all along, drove Dalinar to a kind of focused madness, a clarity only the thrill bestowed. It was the focus of a man, his sword, and the blood he would spill. The thrill seemed to transform within him as he ran, soaking into his tiring muscles, saturating him. It became a power unto itself. So when they crested a hillside some distance south of the rift, he felt somehow more energetic than when he'd left. As his company of elites jogged up, Dalinar pulled to a stop, armored feet grinding on stone. Ahead, down the hill and at the mouth of a canyon, a frantic group was scrambling to arms. The caravan. Its scouts must have spotted the approach of Dalinar's force. They'd been setting up camp, but left their tents, running for the canyon, where they'd be able to avoid being flanked. Dalinar roared, summoning his blade, ignoring the fatigue of his men as he dashed down the hillside. The soldiers wore forest green and white, Satius's colors. Dalinar reached the bottom of the hill and stormed through the now abandoned camp. He swept past the stragglers, slicing out with Oathbringer, dropping them, their eyes burning. Wait. His momentum wouldn't let him stop now. Where was the enemy shardbearer? Something is wrong. Dalinar led his men into the canyon after the soldiers, following the enemy along a wide path up the side. He raised Oathbringer high as he ran. Why would they put on Sarius's colors if they're a secret envoy bringing contraband supplies? Dalinar stopped in place, his soldiers swarming around him. Their path had taken them about 50 feet up from the bottom of the canyon, on the south side of a steep incline. He saw no sign of a shard-bearer as the enemy gathered above. And those uniforms. He blinked. That was wrong. He shouted in order to pull back, but the sound of his voice was overwhelmed by a sudden roar. A sound like thunder, accompanied by a dreadful clatter of rock against rock. The ground quivered, and he turned in horror to find a landslide tumbling down the steep side of the ravine to his right, directly above where he had led his men. He had a fraction of a moment to take it in before the rocks pounded him in a terrible crash. Everything spun, then grew black. Still he was pounded, rolled, crushed. An explosion of molten sparks briefly flashed in his eyes, and something hard smacked him on the head. Finally it ended. He found himself lying in blackness, his head pounding, thick warm blood running down his face and dripping from his chin. He could feel the blood, but not see it. Had he been blinded? His cheek was pressed against a rock. No, he wasn't blind. He'd been buried. And his helm had shattered. He shifted with a groan, and something illuminated the stones around his head. Stormlight seeping from his breastplate. Somehow he'd survived the landslide. He lay face down, prone, buried. He shifted again, and from the corner of his eye saw a rock sink, threatening to crush sideways into his skull. He lay still, his head thundering with pain. He flexed his left hand and found that gauntlet broken, his forearm plate too, but his right-hand armor still worked.
This was a trap.
Sarius was not a traitor. This had been designed by the Rift and its High Lord to lure Dalinar in, then drop stones to crush him. Cowards. They'd tried something like that in Rathalas long ago, too. He relaxed, groaning softly.
No, can't lie here.
Maybe he could pretend to be dead. That sounded so appealing, he closed his eyes and started to drift. A fire ignited inside him.
You have been betrayed, Dalinar. Listen.
He heard voices, men picking through the wreckage of the rock slide. He could make out their nasal accent. Rifters.
Tanalon sent you here to die.
Dalinar sneered, opening his eyes. Those men wouldn't let him hide in this tomb of stone, feigning death. He carried shards. They would find him to recover their prize. He braced himself, using his plated shoulder to keep the rock from rolling against his exposed head, but did not otherwise move. Eventually, the men above started speaking eagerly. From their words, they'd found his armor's cape sticking out through the stone, the glyphs of the Koch and Linnel stark on the blue background. Stones scraped and the burden upon him lightened. The thrill built to a crescendo. The stone near his head rolled back.
Go!
Dalinar heaved with his plated feet and shifted a boulder with his still-armored hand, opening enough space that he could stand up straight. He ripped free of the tomb and stumbled upright into open air, stones clattering. The rifters cursed and scrambled backward as he leaped out of the hole, boots grinding against stones. Dalinar growled, summoning his blade. His armor was in worse shape than he'd assumed. Sluggish, broken in four separate places. All around him, Tanalon's men's eyes seemed to glow. They gathered and grinned at him. He could see the thrill thick in their expressions. His blade and leaking plate reflected in their dark eyes. Blood streaming down the side of his face, Dalinar grinned back at them. They rushed to attack. Dalinar saw only red. He partially came to himself as he found himself pounding a man's head repeatedly against the stones. Behind him lay a pile of corpses with burned eyes piled high around the hole where Dalinar had stood, fighting against them. He dropped the head of the corpse in his hands and breathed out, feeling... What did he feel? Numb, suddenly. Pain was a distant thing. Even anger was nebulous. He looked down at his hands. Why was he using those and not his shard blade? He turned to the side, where Oathbringer protruded from a rock where he'd stabbed it. The gemstone on the pommel was cracked. That was right. He couldn't dismiss it. Something about the crack had interfered. He stumbled to his feet, looking around for more foes, but none came to challenge him. His armor? Someone had broken the breastplate while fighting him, and he felt at a stab wound on his chest. He barely remembered that. The sun was low on the horizon, plunging the canyon into shadows. Around him, discarded bits of clothing flapped in the breeze, and bodies lay still. Not a sound. Not even Kremling scavengers. Drained, he bound the worst of his wounds, then grabbed Oathbringer and set it on his shoulder. Never had a shard blade felt so heavy. He started walking. Along the way, he discarded pieces of shard plate, which grew too heavy. He'd lost blood, far too much. He focused on the steps, one after another. Momentum. A fight was all about momentum. He didn't dare take the obvious route in case he encountered more rifters. He crossed through the wilderness, vines writhing beneath his feet and rock buds sprouting after he passed. The thrill returned to urge him on, for this walk was a fight, a battle. Night fell, and he threw off his last piece of shard plate, leaving only the neck brace. They could regrow the rest of it from that, if they had to. Keep moving. In that darkness, shadowed figures seemed to accompany him. Armies made of red mist at the corners of his vision, charging forces that fell to dust and then sprouted from shadow again, like surging ocean waves in a constant state of disintegration and rebirth. Not just men, but eyeless horses, animals locked in struggle, stifling the life from one another, shadows of death and conflict to propel him through the night. He hiked for an eternity. Eternity was nothing when time had no meaning. He was actually surprised when he approached the light of the rift from torches held by soldiers on the walls. His navigation by the moons and stars had been successful. He stalked through the darkness toward his own camp on the field. There was another army here, Sadius's actual soldiers. They'd arrived ahead of schedule. Another few hours, and Tenelon's ploy wouldn't have worked. Dalinar dragged Oathbringer behind him. It made a soft scraping sound as it cut a line in the stone. He numbly heard soldiers talking by the bonfire ahead, and one called something out. Dalinar ignored them, each step relentless as he passed into their light. A pair of young soldiers in blue crowed their challenges until cutting off and lowering spears, gaping.
"Stormfather," one of them said, stumbling back. "Kalekin the Almighty himself!"
Dalinar continued through camp. Noise stirred at his passing, men crying of visions of the dead and of Voidbringers. He made for his command tent. The eternity it took to get there seemed the same length as the others. How could he cross so many miles in the same time as it took to go the few feet to a simple tent? Dalinar shook his head, seeing red at the sides of his vision. Words broke through the canvas of the tent.
"Impossible! The men are spooked! No! It's simply not possible!"
The flaps burst apart, revealing a man with fine clothing and wavy hair. Sadius gaped, then stumbled to the side, holding the flap for Dalinar, who did not break stride. He walked straight in, Oathbringer slicing a ribbon in the ground. Inside, generals and officers gathered by the grim light of a few sphere lanterns. Evie, comforted by Brightness Calamy, was weeping, though Iole studied the table full of maps. All eyes turned toward Dalinar.
"How?" Teleb asked. "Blackthorn? We sent a team of scouts to inform you as soon as Tenelon turned on us and cast our soldiers off his walls. Our force reported all men lost. An ambush."
Dalinar hefted Oathbringer and slammed it down into the stone ground beside him, then sighed at finally being able to release the burden. He placed his palms on the sides of the battle table, hands crusted in blood. His arms were covered in it, too.
"You sent the same scouts," he whispered, "who first spied on the caravan and reported seeing a shard-bearer leading it?"
Yes, Teleb said.
Traitors, Dalinar said. They're working with Tanelon.
He couldn't have known that Dalinar would parley with him. Instead, the man had somehow bribed away members of the army and had intended to use their reports to coax Dalinar into a hurried ride to the south. Into a trap. It had all been set in motion before Dalinar had spoken to Tanelon, planned well in advance. Teleb barked out orders for the scouts to be imprisoned. Dalinar leaned down over the battle maps on the table.
"This is a map for a siege," he whispered.
"We..." Teleb looked to Sadeus. "We figured that the king would want time to come down himself. To, avenge you, Bright Lord."
"Too slow," Dalinar said, his voice ragged.
"High Prince Sadeus proposed another option," Teleb said. "But the king..." Dalinar looked to Sadeus.
"They used my name to betray you," Sadeus said, then spat to the side. "We will suffer rebellions like this time and time again, unless they fear us, Dalinar."
Dalinar nodded slowly.
"They must bleed," he whispered. "I want them to suffer for this. Men, women, children. They must know the punishment for broken oaths. Immediately."
"Dalinar?"
Ebby stood up.
"Husband?"
She stepped forward toward the table. Then he turned toward her, and she stopped. Her unusual pale westerner skin grew even more starkly white. She stepped backward, pulling her hands toward her chest and gaped at him, horrified. Fear spren growing up from the ground around her. Dalinar glanced toward a sphere lantern which had a polished metal surface. The man who looked back seemed more Voidbringer than man. Face crusted over with blackened blood, hair matted with it, blue eyes wide, jaw clenched. He was sliced with what seemed to be 100 wounds, his padded uniform in tatters.
"You shouldn't do this," Evie said. "Rest. Sleep, Dalinar. Think about this. Give it a few days."
"So tired."
"The entire kingdom thinks us weak, Dalinar," Sadeus whispered. "We took too long to put this rebellion down. You have never listened to me before, but listen now. You want to prevent this sort of thing from happening again? You must punish them. Everyone."
"Punish them,"
Dalinar said, the thrill rising again. Pain, anger, humiliation. He pressed his hands against the map table to steady himself.
"The soul caster that my brother sent. She can make two things."
"Grain and oil," Teleb said.
"Good. Set her to work."
"More food supplies?"
"No. Oil. As much as we have gemstones for. Oh, and someone take my wife to her tent so she may recover from her unwarranted grief. Everyone else, gather round. In the morning we make Rathalos an example. I promised Tanelon that his widows would weep for what I did here, but that is too merciful for what they've done to me. I intend to so thoroughly ruin this place for 10 generations nobody will dare build here for fear of the spirits who will haunt it. We will make a pyre of this city, and there shall be no weeping for its passing, for none will remain to weep."
76. An Animal. 11 years ago. Dalinar agreed to change clothing. He washed his face and arms and let a surgeon look at his wounds. The red mist was still there, coloring his vision. He would not sleep. It wouldn't let him. About an hour after he'd arrived in camp, he trudged back to the command tent, cleaned but not particularly refreshed. The generals had drawn up a new set of battle plans to take the city walls, as instructed by Sadeus. Dalinar inspected and made a few changes, but told them to suspend making plans to march down into the city and clear it. He had something else in mind.
"Bright Lord,"
a messenger woman said, arriving at the tent. She stepped in.
"An envoy is leaving the city.
flying the flag of truce.
Shoot them dead, Dalinar said calmly.
Sir?
Arrows, woman, Dalinar said. Kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot.
Yes, Bright Lord.
The messenger ducked away. Dalinar looked up toward Sadeus, who still wore his shard plate, glittering in the sphere light. Sadeus nodded in approval, then gestured to the side. He wanted to speak in private.
Dalinar left the table. He should hurt more, shouldn't he? Storms. He was so numb he could barely feel anything, aside from that burning within, simmering deep down. He stuffed with Sadeus out of the tent.
I've been able to stall the scribes, Sadeus whispered, as you ordered. Gavilar doesn't know that you live. His orders from before were to wait and lay siege.
My return supersedes his distant orders, Dalinar said. The men will know that. Even Gavilar wouldn't disagree.
Yes, but why keep him ignorant of your arrival?
The last moon was close to setting. Not long until morning.
What do you think of my brother, Sadeus?
He's exactly what we need, Sadeus said. Hard enough to lead a war, soft enough to be beloved during peace. He has foresight and wisdom.
Do you think he could do what needs to be done here?
Sadeus fell silent.
No, he finally said. No, not now. I wonder if you can, either. This will be more than just death. It will be complete destruction.
A lesson, Dalinar whispered.
A display. Tenelon's plan was clever but risky. He knew his chances of winning here depended upon removing you and your shards from the battle.
He narrowed his eyes.
You thought those soldiers were mine. You actually believed I'd betray Gavilar.
I worried.
Then know this, Dalinar, Sadeus said, low, his voice like stone grinding stone.
I would cut out my own heart before betraying Gavilar.
I have no interest in being king. It's a job with little praise and even less amusement. I mean for this kingdom to stand for centuries.
Good, Dalinar said.
Honestly, I worried that you would betray him.
I almost did, once. I stopped myself.
Why?
Because, Dalinar said, there has to be someone in this kingdom capable of doing what needs to be done, and it can't be the man sitting on the throne. Continue to hold the scribes back. It will be better if my brother can reasonably disavow what we're about to do.
Something will leak out soon, Sadeus said. Between our two armies, there are too many span reeds. Storming things are getting so cheap, most of the officers can afford to buy a pair to manage their households from a distance.
Dalinar strode back into the tent, Sadeus following. Oathbringer still sat where he'd stuck it into the stones, though an armorer had replaced the gemstone for him. He pulled the blade from the rock.
Time to attack.
Emiram turned from where he stood with the other generals.
Now, Dalinar? At night?
The bonfires on the wall should be enough.
To take the wall fortifications, yes, Emiram said. But, Bright Lord, I don't relish fighting down into those vertical streets in the night.
Dalinar shared a look with Sadeus.
Fortunately, you won't have to. Send the word for the men to prepare the oil and flaming brands. We march.
High Marshal Parathon took the orders and began organizing specifics. Dalinar lifted Oathbringer on his shoulder.
Time to bring you home.
In under a half hour, men charged the walls. No shardbearers led this time. Dalinar was too weak and his plate was in shambles. Sadeus never liked exposing himself too early, and Teleb couldn't rush in alone. They did it the mundane way, sending men to be crushed by stones or impaled by arrows as they carried ladders. They broke through eventually, securing a section of the wall in a furious, bloody fight. The thrill was an unsatisfied lump inside Dalinar, but he was wrung out, worn down. So he continued to wait until finally Teleb and Sadeus joined the fight and routed the last of the defenders, sending them down from the walls toward the chasm of the city itself.
I need a squad of elites, Dalinar said softly to a nearby messenger, and my own barrel of oil. Have them meet me inside the walls.
Yes, Brightlord, the young boy said, then ran off. Dalinar strode across the field, passing fallen men, bloody and dead. They'd died almost in ranks where waves of arrows had struck. He also passed a cluster of corpses in white, where the envoy had been slaughtered earlier. Warmed by the rising sun, he passed through the now open gates of the wall and entered the ring of stone that surrounded the rift. Sadeus met him there, face plate up, cheeks even redder than normal from exertion.
They fought like void-bringers, more vicious than last time, I'd say.
They know what is coming, Dalinar said, walking toward the cliff edge.
He stopped halfway there.
We checked it for a trap this time, Sadeus noted.
Dalinar continued forward. The rifters had gotten the better of him twice now. He should have learned the first time. He stopped at the edge of the cliff, looking down at a city built on platforms rising up along the widening sides of the rift of stone. It was little wonder they thought so highly of themselves as to resist. Their city was grand, a monument of human ingenuity and grit.
Burn it, Dalinar said.
Archers gathered with arrows ready to ignite, while other men rolled up barrels of oil and pitch to give extra fuel.
There are thousands of people in there, sir, Teleb said softly from his side. Tens of thousands.
This kingdom must know the price of rebellion. We make a statement today.
Obey or die?
Teleb asked.
The same deal I offered you, Teleb. You were smart enough to take it.
And the common people in there? The ones who didn't get a chance to choose a side?
Sadeus snorted from nearby.
We will prevent more deaths in the future by letting every Bright Lord in this kingdom know the punishment for disobedience.
He took a report from an aide, then stepped up to Dalinar.
You were right about the scouts who turned traitor. We bribed one to turn on the others and will execute the rest. The plan was apparently to separate you from the army, then hopefully kill you. Even if you were simply delayed, the Rift was hoping their lies would prompt your army into a reckless attack without you.
They weren't counting on your swift arrival, Dalinar said.
Or your tenacity.
The soldiers unplugged barrels of oil, then began dropping them down, soaking the upper levels of the city. Flaming brands followed, starting struts and walkways on fire. The very foundations of this city were flammable. Tenelon's soldiers tried to organize a fight back out of the rift, but they'd surrendered the high ground, expecting Dalinar to do as he had before, conquering and controlling. He watched as the fires spread, flamespren rising in them, seeming larger and more angry than normal. He then walked back, leaving a solemn Teleb, to gather his remaining elites. Captain Lord Kadash had 50 for him, along with 2 barrels of oil.
Follow, Dalinar said, walking around the rift on its east side, where the fracture was narrow enough to cross on a short bridge.
Screams below, then cries of pain, calls for mercy. People flooded from buildings, shouting in terror, fleeing on walkways and steps toward the basin below. Many buildings burned, trapping others inside. Dalinar led his squad along the northern rim of the rift until they reached a certain location. His armies waited here to kill any soldiers who tried to break out, but the enemy had concentrated their assault on the other side, then been mostly beaten back. The fires hadn't reached up here yet, though Sadeus's archers had killed several dozen civilians who had tried to flee in this direction. For now, the wooden ramp down into the city was clear. Dalinar led his group down one level to a location he remembered so well, the hidden door set into the wall. It was metal now, guarded by a pair of nervous rifter soldiers. Kadash's men shot them down with shortbows. That annoyed Dalinar. All of this fighting and nothing with which to feed the thrill. He stepped over one of the corpses, then tried the door, which was no longer hidden. It was still locked tight. Tenelon had decided to go with security instead of secrets this time. Unfortunately for them, Oathbringer had come home. Dalinar easily cut off the steel hinges. He stepped back as the door slammed forward onto the walkway, shaking the wood.
"Light those," he said, pointing to the barrels. "Roll them down and burn out anyone hiding inside."
The men hurried to obey, and soon the tunnel of rock had fitful black smoke pouring from it. Nobody tried to flee, though he thought he heard cries of pain inside. Dalinar watched as long as he could, until soon the smoke and heat drove him back. The rift behind him was becoming a pit of darkness and fire. Dalinar retreated up the ramp to the stones above. Archers lit the final walkways and ramps behind him. It would be long before people decided to resettle here. High storms were one thing, but there was a more terrible force upon the land, and it carried a shard blade.
Those screams.
Dalinar passed lines of soldiers who waited along the northern rim in silent horror. Many wouldn't have been with Dalinar and Gavilar during the early years of their conquest, when they'd allowed pillaging and ransacking of cities. And for those who did remember, well, he'd often found an excuse to stop things like this before. He drew his lips to a line and shoved down the thrill. He would not let himself enjoy this. That single sliver of decency he could keep back.
"Brightlord," a soldier said, waving to him. "Brightlord, you must see this!"
Just below the cliff here, one tier down into the city, was a beautiful white building, a palace. Farther out along the walkways, a group of people fought to reach the building. The wooden walkways were on fire and preventing their access. Shocked, Dalinar recognized Tanalon the Younger from their encounter earlier.
"Trying to get into his home?" Dalinar thought.
Figures darkened the building's upper windows, a woman and children.
"No, trying to get to his family."
Tanalon hadn't been hiding in the safe room after all.
"Throw a rope," Dalinar said. "Bring Tanalon up here, but shoot down the bodyguards."
The smoke billowing out of the rift was growing thick, lit red by the fires. Dalinar coughed, then stepped back as his men let down a rope to the platform below, a section that wasn't burning. Tanalon hesitated, then took it, letting Dalinar's men haul him up. The bodyguards were sent arrows when they tried to climb up a nearby burning ramp.
"Please,"
Tanalon said, clothing ashen from the smoke as he was hauled up over the stone rim.
"My family, please."
Dalinar could hear them screaming below. He whispered an order, and his elites pushed back the regular Kolin troops from the area, opening up a wide half-circle against the burning rift, where only Dalinar and his closest men were able to observe the captive. Tanalon slumped on the ground.
"Please."
"I," Dalinar said softly, "am an animal."
"What?"
"An animal," Dalinar said, "reacts as it is prodded. You whip it, and it becomes savage. With an animal, you can start a tempest. Trouble is, once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you."
"Blackthorn,"
Tanalon screamed.
"Please! My children!"
"I made a mistake years ago," Dalinar said. "I will not be so foolish again."
And yet, those screams. Dalinar's soldiers seized Tanalon tightly as Dalinar turned from the man and walked back to the pit of fire. Sadeus had just arrived with a company of his own men, but Dalinar ignored them, Oathbringer still held against his shoulder. Smoke stung Dalinar's nose, his eyes watering. He couldn't see across the rift to the rest of his armies, the air warped with heat, colored red. It was like looking into damnation itself. Dalinar released a long breath, suddenly feeling his exhaustion even more deeply.
"It is enough," he said, turning to Sadeus. "Let the rest of the people of the city escape out of the mouth of the canyon below. We have sent our signal."
"What?"
Sadeus said, hiking over.
"Dalinar!"
A loud series of cracks interrupted him. An entire section of the city nearby collapsed into the flames. The palace and its occupants crashed down with it, a tempest of sparks and splintering wood.
"No!"
Tanalon shouted.
"No!"
"Dalinar," Sadeus said.
I prepared a battalion below with archers per your orders.
My orders?
You said to kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot. I had men stationed below. They've launched arrows in at the city struts, burned the walkways leading down. This city burns from both directions, from underneath and from above. We can't stop it now.
Wood cracked as more sections of the city collapsed. The thrill surged, and Delanar pushed it away.
We've gone too far.
Nonsense! Our lesson won't mean much if people can merely walk away.
Sadeus glanced toward Tanelon.
Last loose end is this one. We don't want him getting away again.
He reached for his sword.
I'll do it, Delanar said.
Though the concept of more death was starting to sicken him, he steeled himself. This was the man who had betrayed him. Delanar stepped closer. To his credit, Tanelon tried to leap to his feet and fight. Several elites shoved the traitor back down to the ground, though Captain Lord Kadash himself was just standing at the side of the city, looking down at the destruction. Delanar could feel that heat, so terrible. It mirrored a sense within him. The thrill, incredibly, was not satisfied. Still, it thirsted. It didn't seem it could be satiated. Tanelon collapsed, blubbering.
You should not have betrayed me, Delanar whispered, raising Oathbringer. At least this time you didn't hide in your hole. I don't know who you let take cover there, but know they are dead. I took care of that with barrels of fire.
Tanelon blinked, then started laughing with a frantic, crazed air.
You don't know? How could you not know? But you killed our messengers. You poor fool! You poor, stupid fool!
Delanar seized him by the chin, though the man was still held by his soldiers.
What?
She came to us, Tanelon said, to plead. How could you have missed her? Do you track your own family so poorly? The hole you burned. We don't hide there anymore. Everyone knows about it. No. It's a prison.
Ice washed through Delanar and he grabbed Tanelon by the throat and held, Oathbringer slipping from his fingers. He strangled the man, all the while demanding that he retract what he'd said. Tanelon died with a smile on his lips. Delanar stepped back, suddenly feeling too weak to stand. Where was the thrill to bolster him?
Go back, he shouted at his elites. Search that hole! Go!
He trailed off. Kadash was on his knees, looking woozy, a pile of vomit on the rock before him. Some elites ran to try to do as Delanar said, but they shied away from the rift. The heat rising from the burning city was incredible. Delanar roared, standing, pushing toward the flames. However, the fire was too intense. Where he had once seen himself as an unstoppable force, he now had to admit exactly how small he was. Insignificant. Meaningless.
Once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you.
He fell to his knees and remained there until his soldiers pulled him, limp, away from the heat, and carried him to his camp. 6 hours later, Delanar stood with hands clasped behind his back, partially to hide how badly they were shaking, and stared at a body on the table covered in a white sheet. Behind him, in the tent, some of his scribes whispered, a sound like swishing swords on the practice field. Taleb's wife, Calamy, led the discussion. She thought that Evie must have defected. What else could explain why the burned corpse of a High Prince's wife had been found in an enemy safe house? It fit the narrative. Showing uncharacteristic determination, Evie had drugged the guard protecting her. She'd snuck away in the night. The scribes wondered how long Evie had been a traitor, and if she'd helped recruit the group of scouts who had betrayed Delanar. He stepped forward, resting his fingers on the smooth, too white sheet.
Fool woman.
The scribes didn't know Evie well enough. She hadn't been a traitor. She'd gone to the rift to plead for them to surrender. She'd seen in Dalinar's eyes that he wouldn't spare them. So, almighty helper, she'd gone to do what she could. Dalinar barely had the strength to stand. The thrill had abandoned him, and that left him broken, pained. He pulled back the corner of the sheet. The left side of Evie's face was scorched, nauseating, but the right side had been down toward the stone. It was oddly untouched.
"This is your fault," he thought at her. "How dare you do this, stupid, frustrating woman?"
This was not his fault, not his responsibility.
"Dalinar," Calamy said, stepping up, "you should rest."
"She didn't betray us," Dalinar said firmly.
"I'm sure eventually we'll know what..."
"She did not betray us," Dalinar snapped.
"Keep the discovery of her body quiet, Calamy. Tell the people... tell them my wife was slain by an assassin last night. I will swear the few elites who know to secrecy. Let everyone think she died a hero, and that the destruction of the city today was done in retribution."
Dalinar set his jaw.
Earlier today, the soldiers of his army, so carefully trained over the years to resist pillaging and the slaughter of civilians, had burned a city to the ground. It would ease their consciences to think that first the High Lady had been murdered. Calamy smiled at him, a knowing, even self-important smile. His lie would serve a second purpose. As long as Calamy and the head scribes thought they knew a secret, they'd be less likely to dig for the true answer.
"Not my fault."
"Rest, Dalinar," Calamy said. "You are in pain now, but as the high storm must pass, all mortal agonies will fade."
Dalinar left the corpse to the ministrations of others. As he departed, he strangely heard the screams of those people in the rift. He stopped, wondering what it was. Nobody else seemed to notice.
Yes, that was distant screaming.
In his head, maybe? They all seemed children to his ears, the ones he'd abandoned to the flames. A chorus of the innocent, pleading for help, for mercy.
Evie's voice joined them.
Page from Mythica, The Taker of Secrets. Ja Anat, creator and corrupter, unique among the unmade. Creator. Her twisted creations are her beloved children. Her admiration of the spren of our world inspires her. Corrupter. She seeks the children of honor and the children of cultivation. With one touch, she corrupts.
77. Storm Shelter. Something must be done about the remnants of Odium's forces. The Parsh, as they are now called, continue their war with zeal, even without their masters from damnation. From Drawer 3020, First Emerald. Kaladin dashed across the street.
"Wait!" he shouted. "One more here!"
Ahead, a man with a thin mustache struggled to close a thick wooden door. It stuck partway open, however, giving just enough time for Kaladin to slip through. The man swore at him, then pulled the door shut. Made of dark stumpweight wood, it made a muffled thunk. The man did up the locks, then stepped back and let three younger men place a thick bar into the settings.
"Cutting that close, armsman," the mustachioed man said, noting the wall guard patch on Kaladin's shoulder.
"Sorry,"
Kaladin said, handing the man a few spheres as a cover charge.
"But the storm is still a few minutes away."
"Can't be too careful with this new storm," the man said. "Be glad the door got stuck."
Syl sat on the hinges, legs hanging over the sides. Kaladin doubted it had been luck. Sticking people's shoes to the stone was a classic windspren trick. Still, he did understand the doorman's hesitance. Everstorms didn't quite match up with scholarly projections. The previous one had arrived hours earlier than anyone had guessed it would. Fortunately, they tended to blow in slower than high storms. If you knew to watch the sky, there was time to find shelter. Kaladin ran his hand through his hair and started deeper into the winehouse. This was one of those fashionable places that, while technically a storm shelter, was used only by rich people who had come to spend the storm enjoying themselves. It had a large common room and thick walls of stone blocks. No windows, of course. A bartender kept people liquored near the back, and a number of booths ringed the perimeter. He spotted Shallan and Adolin sitting in a booth at the side. She wore her own face, but Adolin looked like Melaran Kahl, a tall, bald man around Adolin's height. Kaladin lingered, watching Shallan laugh at something Adolin said, then poke him, with her safe hand, in the shoulder. She seemed completely enthralled by him. And good for her. Everyone deserved something to give them light these days. But what about the glances she shot him on occasion? Times when she didn't quite seem to be the same person. A different smile, an almost wicked look to her eyes. You're seeing things, he thought to himself. He strode forward and caught their attention, settling into the booth with a sigh. He was off duty and free to visit the city. He'd told the others he'd find his own shelter for the storm, and only had to be back in time for evening post-storm patrol.
"Took you long enough, bridge boy," Adolin said.
"Lost track of time," Kaladin said, tapping the table. He hated being in storm shelters. They felt too much like prisons. Outside, thunder announced the Everstorm's arrival. Most people in the city would be inside their homes, the refugees instead in public storm shelters. This for-pay shelter was sparsely occupied, only a few of the tables or booths in use. That would give privacy to talk, fortunately, but it didn't bode well for the proprietor. People didn't have spheres to waste.
"Where's Elokar?" Kaladin asked.
"Elokar is working on last-minute plans through the storm," Adolin said. "He's decided to reveal himself tonight to the Light Eyes he's chosen. And he's done a good job, Cal. We'll at least have some troops because of this. Fewer than I'd like, but something."
"And maybe another Night Radiant?" Shallan asked, glancing at Kaladin. "What have you found?"
He quickly caught them up on what he'd learned. The Wall Guard might have a soulcaster and was definitely producing food somehow. It had seized emerald stores in the city, a fact he'd recently discovered.
"Azure is tough to read," Kaladin finished. "She visits the barracks every night, but never talks about herself. Men report seeing her sword cut through stone, but it has no gemstone. I think it might be an honor blade, like the weapon of the assassin in white."
"Huh," Adolin said, sitting back.
"You know, that would explain a lot."
"My platoon has dinner with her tonight, after evening patrol," Kaladin said. "I intend to see what I can learn." A serving girl came for orders, and Adolin bought them wine. He knew about light-eyed drinks and, without needing to be told, ordered something without a touch of alcohol for Kaladin. He'd be on duty later. Adolin did get Shallan a cup of violet, to Kaladin's surprise. As the serving girl left with the order, Adolin reached out toward Kaladin.
"Let me see your sword."
"My sword?" Kaladin said, glancing toward Syl, who was huddling near the back of the booth and humming softly to herself, a way of ignoring the sounds of the Everstorm which rumbled beyond the stones.
"Not that sword," Adolin said. "Your side sword."
Kaladin glanced down to where the sword stuck out beside his seat. He'd almost forgotten he was wearing the thing, which was a relief. The first few days, he'd bumped the sheath into everything. He unbuckled it and set it on the table for Adolin.
"Good blade," the prince said. "Well maintained. It was in this condition when they assigned it to you?"
Kaladin nodded. Adolin drew it and held it up.
"It's a little small," Shallan noted.
"It's a one-handed sword, Shallan. Close-range infantry weapon. A longer blade would be impractical."
"Longer, like shard blades?" Kaladin asked.
"Well, yes. They break all kinds of rules,"
Adolin waved the sword through a few motions, then sheathed it.
I like this High Marshal of yours.
It's not even her weapon, Kaladin said, taking it back.
You boys done comparing your swords? Shallan asked. Because I've found something.
She thumped a large book onto the table. One of my contacts finally tracked down a copy of Hesse's Mythica. It's a newer book and has been poorly received. It attributes distinct personalities to the Unmade.
Adolin lifted the cover, peeking in. So, anything about swords in it?
Oh, hush, she said, then batted his arm in a playful and somewhat nauseating way.
Yes, it was uncomfortable to watch the two of them. Kaladin liked them both, just not together.
He forced himself to look around the room, which was occupied by light eyes trying to drink away the sounds of the storm. He tried not to think of refugees who would be packed into stuffy public shelters, clutching their meager possessions and hoping some of what they were forced to leave behind would survive the storm.
The book, Shallan said, claims there were 9 unmade. That matches the vision Dalinar saw, though other reports speak of 10 unmade. They're likely ancient Spren, primal, from the days before human society and civilization. The book claims the 9 rampaged during the desolations, but says not all were destroyed at Ahariariam. The author insists that some are active today. I find her vindicated, obviously, by what we've experienced.
And there's one of these in the city, Adolin said.
I think, Shallan said. I think there might be 2, Adolin. Sia Anat, the Taker of Secrets, is one. Again, Dalinar's visions mention her. Sia Anat's touch corrupted other Spren, and we're seeing the effects of that here.
And the other one? Adolin asked.
A Shirtmarn, Shallan said softly.
She slipped a little knife from her satchel and began to absently carve at the top of the table.
The heart of the revel. The book has less to say on him, though it speaks of how he leads people to indulge in excess.
2 unmade, Kaladin said. Are you sure?
Sure as I can be.
Wit confirmed the second, and the way the queen acted leading up to the riots seems an obvious sign. As for the Taker of Secrets, we can see the corrupted Spren ourselves.
How do we fight 2? Kaladin asked.
How do we fight 1? Adolin said. In the tower we didn't so much fight the thing as frighten it off. Shallan can't even say how she did that. What does the book say about fighting them?
Nothing.
Shallan shrugged, blowing at her little carving on the table. It was of a corrupted glory Spren in the shape of a cube, which another patron had attracted.
The book says if you see a Spren the wrong color, you're supposed to immediately move to another town.
There's kind of an army in the way, Kaladin said.
Yes. Amazingly, your stench hasn't cleared them out yet.
Shallan started leaping through her book. Kaladin frowned. Comments like that were part of what confused him about Shallan. She seemed perfectly friendly one moment, and then she'd snap at him the next, while pretending it was merely part of normal conversation. But she didn't talk like that to others, not even in jest.
What is wrong with you, woman? He thought.
They'd shared something intimate in the chasms back on the shattered plains. A high storm huddled together, and words. Was she embarrassed by that? Was that the reason she snapped at him sometimes? If that was so, how did one explain the other times, when she watched him and grinned, when she winked in a sly way?
Hesse reports stories of the Unmade not only corrupting Spren, but corrupting people, Shallan was saying. Maybe that's what's happening with the palace. We'll know more after infiltrating the cult tonight.
I don't like you going alone, Adolin said.
I won't be alone. I'll have my team.
1 washwoman and 2 deserters, Kaladin said. If Gaz is anything to judge by, Shallan, you shouldn't put too much trust in those men. Shallan raised her chin.
At least my soldiers knew when to get away from the war camps, as opposed to just standing around letting people fling arrows at them.
We trust you, Shallan,
Adolin said, eyeing Kaladin as if to say, drop it. And we really need a look at that oath gate.
What if I can't open it? Shallan asked. What then?
We have to retreat back to the Shattered Plains, Kaladin said.
Elokar won't leave his family.
Then Drahi Skaar and I rush the palace, Kaladin said. We fly in at night, enter through the upper balcony, grab the queen and the young prince. We do it all right before the high storm comes, then the lot of us fly back to Urethiru.
And leave the city to fall, Adolin said, drawing his lips to a line.
Can the city hold? Shallan asked. Maybe until we get back with a real army marched out here?
That would take months, Adolin said. And the wall guard is, what, 4 battalions?
5 in total, Kaladin said. 5,000 men? Shallan asked. So few?
That's large for a city garrison, Adolin said. The point of fortifications is to let a small number hold against a much larger force. But the enemy has an unexpected advantage. Voidbringers who can fly, and a city infested with their allies.
Yeah, Kaladin said. The wall guard is earnest, but they won't be able to withstand a dedicated assault. There are tens of thousands of Parshmen out there, and they're close to attacking. We don't have much time left. The Fused will sweep in to secure portions of the wall, and their armies will follow. If we're going to hold this city, we'll need Radiants and Shardbearers to even the odds.
Kaladin and Shallan shared a look. Their Radiants were not a battle-ready group. Not yet. Storms his men had barely taken to the skies. How could they be expected to fight those creatures who flew so easily upon the winds? How could he protect this city and protect his men? They fell silent, listening to the room shake with the sounds of thunder outside. Kaladin finished his drink, wishing it were one of Rock's concoctions instead, and flicked away an odd kremling that he spotted clinging to the side of the bench. It had a multitude of legs and a bulbous body with a strange tan pattern on its back. Disgusting. Even with the stresses to the city, the proprietor could at least keep this place clean.
Once the storm finally blew itself out, Shallan stepped from the winehouse, holding Adolin's arm. She watched Kaladin hurry off toward the barracks,